Hi, I'm Doug Keck, and welcome to the Catholic Sphere. You know, each week we bring you an insightful discussion on the latest issues facing the Catholic Church and the culture we live in from a theological perspective. Today's topic, living in the fatherhood. Is it just biological? Up first, we have EWTN's Vice President of Theology, Colin Donovan. He's in our theology studio. Next, we have famed psychologist, author, EWTN radio and television host, the one and only, it's Dr. Ray Guarindi. Also a great author. He joins us from Ohio. And to round out our panel, we also have host of EWTN Radio's Beacon of Truth, the very popular show host here on EWTN, the dynamic deacon himself, Deacon Harold Burke Sivers. And he's traveling this week, so he happens to be on the road from Ohio. Hopefully he has found a safe place to do the show from. Welcome, team. It's great to have all of you joining us for this program. Thank you very much. And I wanted to also mention the fact that we're talking about fatherhood. And before we get started, let me hit on a couple of things quick. Deacon Harold Burke Sivers, tell us, what are you doing these days? Bring our audience up to speed.
Well, as normal, I've been traveling a lot. I've been very much enjoying doing my radio show, Beacon of Truth. You know, and everywhere I go, I am seeing the impact of EWTN. You know, people said they've enjoyed watching me for the last 20 years on EWTN television, now on radio. And, you know, people tell me how EWTN has changed their lives. And I just feel so incredibly honored and blessed to be part of this family here at the network. And, you know, it's really affected my family's life, my mom and my dad coming to faith through watching EWTN. So, you know, I've been traveling and speaking and writing, and it's just been a tremendous blessing to be able to do this work in the Lord's vineyard.
So for equal time, I turn to Dr. Ray to tell us about his latest couple of books.
Well, actually, I feel a little intimidated here, Doug. You've got Colin there, who's this brilliant theologian. You got Deacon Harold, the guy is just flat out one of the best preachers around. I feel like I am Wheel of Fortune waiting for Jeopardy. I think that's kind of what I'm intimidated by here, but I'm always glad to be with you. As you and I have talked before, I learned the secret to writing books. You can't worry about them being all that good.
Okay. So what are your latest two not so good books you may want to mention?
How to Get Along with Almost Everybody and Drama-Free Discipline. Mm-hmm. Those two. And then I've got another one coming out with you guys on anxiety. So we'll see how that goes. Okay. I'm a little nervous about it. We'll see.
That's right. We're all anxious how you're going to do on this show. So let me go to you, Colin. Since I don't know that you have any commercial material, maybe you can talk about the crisis of fatherhood, why this is an important topic.
Sure. You know, we've done a number of shows in the last couple of years about, you know, femininity and feminism and all of this. But to see if there's a crisis in fatherhood, you only need to look at our culture and at our society. You know, I grew up in the era of Leave It to Beaver, and now there's not a program on television that you would want to sit down with the family and watch as a family unless you were interested in weirdo behaviors or, you know, transgenderism or some other mm-hmm. thing. So I think the real question is, how did we get to it? How did the notion that men are, you know, we hear the expression toxic masculinity. How do we get to the point where men are considered to be toxic if they act in a masculine way, or in family life, mm-hmm. if they act as a father rather than in some other role in the family? Mm-hmm. So I think the culture is a reflection of that, but we've been a long way in getting here. Historically, the idea of family, although it was corrupted by original sin and all of that, is simply drawn from nature, that the father is the one who has the physical strength and the wherewithal to guard, protect, and provide for the family. The woman is the one who in marriage with him looks basically looks after the family and takes care of them in the home and so on. And this is sort of the natural paradigm of family life, but obviously it has, as I noted, the, you know, original sin affects this in the way men behave and the way women behave. But we've seen in the last century to century and a half a sort of a deconstruction of this idea, mm-hmm. as imperfect as it was, because after all, we've had the gospel come along since then. As imperfect as that natural idea was, we've had counter ideas. Mm-hmm. And so feminism, which we've talked about on different Catholic spheres, certainly that's one element of it, in which the woman's role is primarily to do her career and to, you know, make her own choices and not be shackled with family life. And then other models that are presented in the culture. So we've gotten here by a long road, and I guess the question is as much how are we get back to it? How do we reform family as the culture sees it, and can we even do that?
Okay, Dr. Ray, let me ask you, because of your dealing with the secular society so many years, I mean, there used to be, what was the line, a woman needs a man like a fish needs a bicycle, this kind of idea that in the world today, really, men are really not that important. Where did you see that coming from, and did you see it over the years, even in your own craft and having been a guest on many popular shows over the years?
One of the things that has surprised me as a shrink is how easily people can be shaped. It takes a few ideas pushed from the cultural heights that can shape things. Guys used to be necessary, whether you liked them or whether you didn't, we were necessary. We built things, we protected, we cared for. Well, now, if you look at the stats, the women, by and large, are better educated. Mm-hmm. They attend more schools, more graduate schools. They are moving well into the universities and business. So they look at guys like, well, yeah, I mean, you're kind of something that we can tolerate mm-hmm. if we have to, but we really don't need you. Kind of the old bicycle fish thing. Mm-hmm. It stuns me how ideas that clash with reality can be swallowed by so many as they are shaped by the culture at large.
So let me ask you, Deacon Harold, you're out and about, you know, evangelizing and giving talks, et cetera, around the globe, really. And so let me ask you, do you generally find that same concern about the attack on male leadership wherever you go, or is it mostly something just in the West?
No, it's definitely universal, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. I think Colin absolutely nailed it when he looked at the root causes for what we're seeing today. And I would totally agree, you know, the so-called feminist movement and sexual revolution of the 60s, no-fault divorce. I think the legalization of abortion. I think the watering down of the liturgy, which included the use of inclusive language, which strips the maleness of God. You know, because remember, we men have borrowed God's sacred name, Father. God's been Father from all eternity, but he allows men, males, to borrow that sacred name. And using that name comes a tremendous responsibility, no matter what our state in life, whether you're a father as like a priest or father in a home, the domestic church, or whether you're single being a witness of God's love in the culture. You know, we've completely lost that sense of godly fatherhood and leadership. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because leadership is about being a boss. No, it's about being a servant. That's why Jesus washed the feet of the apostles at the Last Supper to give us the model that headship and leadership and authority is rooted in service. And we need to get back to that.
Do you see this, as a follow-up, Deacon, do you see that this is something that, you know, is almost like demonic in the sense that what you see going on in society in many cases is the male role is being replaced by the government so that basically you don't need to have the actual father there. He can maybe help you have a child, but after that, you know, outside of maybe paying some support or maybe, you know, that kind of support situation, we rely on the government for everything else to take care of me.
Well, and Dr. Ray was exactly right. You know, when you see models like that, you know, the social welfare system, remember, it was designed to be a stopgap measure. Mm-hmm. You know, the family has reached some kind of crisis. Here is a temporary solution. It wasn't meant for the dissolution of the family and fatherhood not being necessary. But that's exactly what happened. And remember, from my law enforcement perspective, remember, I was in law enforcement for 23 years. Mm-hmm. I can tell you for a fact that many of the men who are incarcerated in our prison system today, the vast majority, I would say a safe number would be 70%. It's probably higher than that, but a safe number that no one would argue with, 70% of those men are in prison, did not have fathers present and active in their lives when they were growing up. And so without that essence of fatherhood, and it, even so, mothers can be the best mothers they can be, but they cannot take the place of fathers. Fathers play a unique and special role in the life of the family, in the life of the church, and in the life of the culture.
Let me ask you, Dr. Ray, we always have to make sure we put the caveat in that, of course, we're not talking about everybody, and there are many situations where unbelievable families have come out of single mothers' situations, and nuclear families have had terrible outcomes, so we stipulate that fact, but we're talking about the vast majority or the largest number. Let me ask you again from a psychological, I remember kind of at one time, when, let's say in the 60s, it kind of ran out in the 60s and 70s, you know, kind of the John Wayne hero kind of tough guy, where we ended up more with the Hawkeye from MASH, you know, the kind of the, a little more of the touchy-feely man was really what a man should really be. And I wonder how much of an impact in the sense that you have the feminization of education. I mean, these days, if you're in grammar schools and high schools, the vast majority of teachers are women. It's not even like we were taught by many women, but they were sisters at the time.
Vast majority of administrators are women, and women tend to look at things differently than guys. They tend to be more empathic. They tend to be more negotiable. They tend to use words more often than action. So as the women infuse themselves into a lot of these places, the whole demeanor of these institutions change. I think it would surprise a lot of people, and this is what I see in my office, how many women want a strong man in their lives. One of the biggest complaints I hear from the women is that the dads are along for the ride. The dads are not stepping into discipline. The dads are letting mom set the standards. The dads are just kind of there. They don't want conflict. I cannot tell you how many women come to me saying, I wish my husband were a man.
Well, why do you think that's the case? Why do you think that changed? Is it just that they are interpreting what society expects of them now?
Reality always wins. If God designed it that way, for men to take a leadership role, then the reality says that's how it works. And to the degree that society says, no, God doesn't really know what he's talking about. We're enlightened. We know better. We're going to shift it all around. It doesn't work. And there's a lot of people within it that know something's wrong. The women come to me. They know something is wrong. But they're thinking, well, I guess this is the way it is now. They want men to be toxic sensitivity.
Okay. Well, let me ask you, Colin, on that, talking at it from the church perspective, you know, obviously, you know, we hear a lot about the patriarchy, and certainly that's one of the attacks, quote unquote, on the hierarchy of the church. What's the church's perspective on fatherhood?
Well, it was noted at the top of the show, and that is that, you know, God is our model of a father. And in that model, there's no question where the divine nature begins and ultimately where it ends. In the end, the Spirit comes back to Father and Son. And so, in a way, this is, as Pope John Paul II noted, this is how we should see the model of marriage as well. It's not that God is male and female, as in human nature, but human nature had to show, in a particular way, a reflection of God in both its origin, the Father, and in its receptive, loving return, which is shown in the woman. And those turn out to be the characteristics of femininity. And you can read many authors, whether it's Alice von Hildebrand or others, talking about the characteristics of the feminine, and you will read those kinds of things, that this receptivity, the showing of love, this giving order to love is something which is their gift. And so when men and women take their proper roles, you can have a communion of persons in which there is, as Paul puts it in Ephesians, a mutual subjection. meaning that there is order in the family, but mutual subjection means that it's not an order of authority in the sense that, well, the father rules. It's sort of the Victorian or the paterfamilias of Roman times. Whatever he says is the law. Mm. No, in a communion of persons, yes, there is a source of authority that goes down through the family. But on the other hand, there is this communion of love, which means that, especially for human beings with darkened intellects and weak wills, our fallen human nature, men can't assume that they're going to know the answer to everything. They can't assume that all of their solutions will be the right ones. The mutuality comes in the communion that takes place with the spouse so that you have a truly family decision. And so I think some of this has been forgotten. You see models which emphasize the male authority and the female subjectivity and subjection even. But there's a Christian model in there of a communion of persons in which there is mutual subjection, but also still the order which God put into the family at the very beginning.
Right. Well, let me ask you, Deacon, I think about self-donation, John Paul, too, talking about that that's really what we're giving. You know, marriage isn't 50-50, it's 100 and 100, if not 110 and 110 in that situation. Now, as a man in dealing with this, we obviously want to reclaim fatherhood and maybe some level of that masculinity. At the same time, we're not looking to go back, as Colin indicated, to some overly strict period in the past, maybe where men were not allowed to show their emotions or even their affection for their children.
Yeah, you know, when Colin was talking just now, my heart was pounding. I'm like, yes! I mean, that is the message I think that every person in the church needs to hear. It was so beautifully articulated. And yeah, so in Genesis chapter 2, it says, God put the man, Ha-Adam, so the definite article is there, meaning one man, in the garden to till and to keep it. So the word for till is abad. In Hebrew, it means a work that's in the form of service. And to keep is shamar, means to protect and defend. So from the very beginning, as Colin alluded to, that when God put man in the garden, he gave him his purpose, his vocation, his calling, his reason for existing. Serve, protect, and defend everything that I am entrusting to you. So if we look at it from a little bit of a theological perspective, I would say that when God created a woman, he pulled from his heart. Now, again, caveat here, right? Whenever we talk about God using human language, it's very we can never exhaust or explain who God is using our limited human language. We only can talk about God by analogy. So we talk about the inner life of God, the church calls that circumcision or divine perichoresis, the life of God within himself. I think when God created woman, he pulled from his heart, right? So that's why we say the woman is the heart of the home. She's the heart of the family with the characteristics that Dr. Ray described earlier. But the man is more like the head, like headship, leadership, authority. He's there to serve, protect, defend, the guard, that beautiful heart of love. So he represents God's the way God enters into the world, the way he experiences the world. So that Jesus was male, right? So the word became flesh and dwelt among us to show us the power of God's love. And so we need to get back to that proper understanding of who we are as men, how we have, again, as I mentioned earlier, borrowing God's sacred name, and then how we live that out in the life of the church, in the culture, and in our families.
Well, let me ask you, Dr. Ray, we were talking about, let's say, the over-feminization that you were talking about, but also the therapeutic world we live in today and the therapeutic culture. Do you think that's a function of that?
The therapeutic culture emphasizes the self. Mm-hmm. Christianity does not emphasize the self. Therapeutic culture says if someone distresses you, if you're discontent, if you're unhappy, then you make changes in your life and you get them out of your life if you have to. So if indeed I'm not good at looking at myself, but I know I'm discontent, it could be my wife's fault. Okay. Therefore, I better get out of here because then I'll be content. Of course, the research says that's not true. Much of the time when you leave a marriage, you become even more discontent. That said, I will say this to fathers. Act your faith. A guy asked me once, what are your regrets as a dad? I said, well, here's one. I used to say my prayers underneath the covers. My kids couldn't tell if I was asleep or saying my prayers. If I had it to do over again every night, they'd see me kneeling by my bed, saying my prayers. Mm-hmm. Another thing I tell dads, if you're gonna have high standards, if you're gonna take that leadership role that the culture looks at you like you're some kind of Neanderthal throwback, then you better be as affectionate as all get out. That kid better know that you love him through your touch, through your hugs, through your kisses. You don't let a 15-year-old set the terms. Oh, Dad, come on, Dad, we're out in public, man, don't do that. My son played basketball when he was 17. I used to go down on the basketball court before the game. I'd grab him, I'd hug him, I'd kiss him right in front of everybody. Mm-hmm. You should have heard the gasps from the bleachers. I'm breaking all the team rules. And I said to my son, I said, Petey, that bother you when I do that? He said, would it matter, Dad? I said, no, it wouldn't. You know what he told me later, guys? He said a number of his teammates came up to him and said, I wish my dad would do that.
Right. Right, exactly. I was thinking with so many times you hear those stories later where people recount that, that maybe at that time he was embarrassed, but obviously underneath he maybe wasn't, and certainly years later was appreciative that that was the situation. So let me ask you, Colin, you know, part of it, you know, in the church, you know, we've kind of had, again, the patriarchy, but you're living in a world now where, as Dr. Ray was saying, women's education, all of the basic fields that, that they can participate in, and now even, you know, in the superheroes, there's, you know, you've got, you know, women's superheroes, not that there weren't before, but it seems to be more, and even the idea of seeing in these action movies where women become the hero, which is okay, I guess, too, but, you know, they're suddenly they have to mimic what men did to show that they're equal, just like men shouldn't be mimicking women to show that they're equal. How do we keep those in balance?
Sure. Yeah, and I think we've suggested this a couple times earlier in the show, too, that there are always unique circumstances. And we look in history and we see that Joan of Arc took up the sword. You would think of that as a masculine role. But it was a unique situation, circumstances, and she was given the grace and the charism to do that. And so in that sense, you could say, sure, a woman could be a superhero. But what we see in the culture is more than that. We see this, you know, in essence, the demasculinization of men and the feminization or the masculinization of women. And so this, I think, has a lingering effect in the culture and encourages people to think that there's no difference between them. It's just a functional difference. Who does what? And we get the same language in the church. Well, why can't a woman be a priest? It's just a function, so she could do that just as well as him. In fact, she's probably more empathetic and be a better minister than he would be. But that's not the point. He stands there as an icon of Christ. And as an icon of Christ, Christ chose to be an icon of the Father as a male, because this is God going outside of himself to give life and going outside of himself to give redemption, rather than inside himself as a woman. If we were, you know, in some of the Eastern religions where God is everything, God could be a woman, because women create within them. Men create outside of them. So we are mimics of God or images of God in that sense. And you can't replace that role, especially in the supernatural understanding of it and the priesthood. But yet people start to see every role in culture and even in the church as a question of function and who can do it best and better. Well, the reality is men do some things better by their nature and women do some things better by their nature. And so those should guide most choices, other than the extraordinary ones, about what roles to take in a society.
Right. It also seems to be sometimes behind some of these, certainly in the church, seems to be an issue of power that runs behind it. Deacon Harold, how do you find that to be when you're traveling as far as women's inclusion or concerns about, like, deaconesses, things like that?
Yeah, yeah, you do see some concerns about that, but Colin is exactly right. They limit it to function, mm-hmm. you know, and it's not that at all. I think what we need to do, men need to return to the idea, as you mentioned earlier, Doug, about self-gift, self-donation, kenosis, the breaking open, and Jesus on the cross broke himself open and poured himself out in love. And we men need to do the same thing, break ourselves open and pour ourselves out in love. In sacrifice, in service to the church, to our families, the domestic church, and to this culture. When we bear witness to the authentic fatherhood of God and the way we live out that fatherhood mm-hmm. as the men that God created and calls us to be, then we're gonna start to see changes in the culture. And then the women can just sit back and say, oh, he's got this. Mm-hmm. I can now relax and be who God called me to be. And that beautiful unity within the complementarity of their being as man and woman.
And Dr. Ray, I think we've talked about this many times. You've brought it up. The idea that the best projector of children continuing with their faith isn't the mother going to church on a regular basis. It's actually the family, let alone, but mostly the father practicing the faith and going to mass.
Study was done a while back that said if both parents take the kids to church, there's about a 50 to 70% chance the kids will remain in church. If mom alone takes the kid to church, about 20%. Mm-hmm. If dad alone takes the kids to church, it's equal to both mom and dad taking mm-hmm. the kids to church. So that reflects, I believe, the way God set it up. Interesting survey done, gentlemen. It was on 2020. And we were talking about the presence of males, just being there. They decided to call the bull elephants out of the herd. They said the herds are matriarchal. We'll let the female elephants run things. We'll get the males out of there. We'll use them for other things. Very shortly, they found that pretty soon the adolescent males started becoming bullies. Hmm. For the heck of it, on the game reserve, they started knocking the rhinos around just to be mean. They reintroduced the male bulls back into the herd, and that stopped. Wow. And the male bulls didn't have to do anything but be present.
That's an amazing allegory, really, to what we're dealing with in society. Thank you, Dr. Ray. Thank you, Colin, and, of course, Deacon Harold, for being with us. Enjoyed the panel, and we hope you did as well. Thank you for joining us, and don't forget to join us next week right here on The Catholic Sphere, where we'll bring yet another topic dealing with theological issues affecting the Catholic Church and Catholics everywhere. I'm Doug Keck. Thanks for joining us. This has been The Catholic Sphere.